question. Why would the bar support?
You're our guest here. You know, you're from NSA. You've been there. Do you have any evidence that we're spying on regular, you know, just regular political Americans who may have views on all kinds of things? Or are we limiting it to people who are actually engaged in conversations or emailing with people in highly suspicious situations in the Mideast?
I can't say one way or the other. And I can't go into the details of how NSA does their business. It would be classified. But the question arises, why would you do this beyond the FISA court?
Because apparently when you want to do this mining by going by topic rather than by who's on the phone, you would never get a court order.
That's true. That's
well,
true.
Then how can you do it?
Well, ultimately, a large, broad brush approach could be used where you know, if you have a haystack of information, you suck it all in to try to find the needle.
We're under attack on 9/11. A couple days after that, if I replace...
Chris Matthews, you distorter of information, Chris Matthews, you denier of real evidence, Chris Matthews, on your little hardball rhetoric show. All this talk about finding out information, data mining, and all of that type of stuff. Well, since there were a lot of Saudis already here, why didn't the U.S. Empire seek to quote-unquote question them, since they were supposed to have ties with Uncle Ben, you know, before he kicked the bucket? Why? Because you're all on the same game. There's people like Alta and others who were meeting with high officials on the day of the hit. Why did they not join in conversation concerning the attack with the higher authorities? Probably because they were too busy planning it with Cheney and the rest. You know what time it is, slave time. Check it out. You're listening to 103.3, 101.1 peakradio.org with Skid in Santa Cruz, 104.1 Berkeley, 96.3 Surge Radio, 107.5 out of North Carolina, LUBER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe. Check out the Slave Web, just go Slave World Radio, Google, find out what time it is tonight. We're going to shoot our way into the Cartoon Network of religion and censorship. We got all that and a hell of a lot more on 103.3 Slave Revolt.
Seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Amount of energy that's going to flow out from that light off.
research of the Cartoon Network called Media Institutions have been reporting how another group of characters are in an uproar over the display of their beloved cartoon character. We're going to explore this a little bit in a Beyond the Shadow segment called The Cartoon Network of Religious Censorship. There's a little show on KPFA with Larry Bensky, and he had on noted author Michael Parente with this other cat named Khalil Bandy, who says he's a cartoonist and is involved with KPFA. Also, we're going to explore their conversation as it pertains to the outcry that is taking place by many Muslims over the display of the Muslims, Muhammad, who they call their prophet, or one of their prophets. So, first, let's hear Parente outline some of his position concerning this event, and then let us take it from there.
I should point out the origin of these, which is that the editor of this Danish newspaper said that he was disturbed because he couldn't find anybody to illustrate a children's book.
Exactly.
And so he ran a competition, asked people to send in caricatures, cartoons, whatever you want to call them. And these were some of the ones that came in. Now, that doesn't explain why he then printed them in his newspaper. That's the part where I come in here, Michael Parente, and I think to myself, wait a minute, if somebody was doing a competition for a song, a theme song for KPFA, and somebody sent me one that was full of obscenities and anti-Semitic and anti-black remarks, would I then think I had to play it on the air because it was part of a competition? And there's no way that these illustrations were going to be used in a children's book, especially the ones about with Muhammad is with a turban full of missiles. What's the point of putting them in your newspaper? Seems to me that that was that the guy should at the very least have been fired for this, because it was a stupid thing to do editorially. And in fact, the editor of François, which is one of the biggest papers in France, was fired this week for having reproduced the cartoons.
Yeah, fire the editors for these cartoons if you want. If you think you're gaining something from that, go ahead and do it. Look, I feel if you're going to oppose the offenses and the crimes that have been committed by the West against the Middle East, you ought to really do go fight the real things. The destruction in every single one of these countries of democratic secular movements by the CIA and by the West. In every one of these countries, in Turkey, in Lebanon, in Egypt, in Iraq, the destruction and the murder and the assassination and the execution of democratic leaders, of reformers and such by the West, the supporting of the most retrograde, fundamentalist, vicious, violent people who are now the ones that we're opposing, those guys were created by the West. Osama bin Laden was created by the CIA. Saddam Hussein was Washington's poster boy all through the 80s and when he was doing his most murder and his most torture. So if people really want to oppose the crimes and violations and offenses of the West, they ought to really go after the ones that are killing people.
Khalil Bandib, I know you agree, at least in part with that, about the West's role in imperialism, colonialism, or whatever you want to call it.
Yes, I agree with that part. I just don't agree with the, again, separating this incident from its proper context. That's what really bothers me. I cannot see how that is different from, for example, what happened before to another beleaguered religious minority in Europe, and that's what happened to the Jews. They were first demonized in the press, in the cartoons. You're a historian, you remember that. That was step number one towards total final solution.
Well,
I think we're witnessing something similar here. Maybe you'll call me paranoid, but that's what's happening on several levels. In Europe, as Muslims become more and more visible and look different, there's a backlash, there's a xenophobic, nativist backlash. And in the Middle East, we are still invading, bombing, killing, wholesale genocide.
That's right.
In Iraq, in Palestine, in Afghanistan, in so many places. You cannot just say, well, you guys grow up, relax. It's just, you know, we're just playful people here. We like to enjoy our freedom of speech. It's completely irresponsible. And this from a cartoonist who has to decide for himself every day when he picks up his pen, is this irresponsible? Is this going too far? You have to, you call it self-censorship, I call it responsibility. It's the old saw about swinging your fist. How free are you to swing your fist? Your freedom to swing your Islamophobic fist stops at my Muslim nose.
All right, now swinging one's fist and these little cartoons, it can be argued that they're different things. But going beyond all of that type of stuff, part of the thing that's going on with the world of the slaves and in the world of, you know, the hocus pocus types is that we truly are in completely different worlds. And in reality, that type of genetic makeup forces us to have different types of realities and perceptions. Now, as far as this little Danish paper and these other little papers and states and all of that, were they trying to be provocative? Of course. Were they trying to promote their various vicious forms of biases? Of course. But when you hear this Khalil Cat talk about how, you know, some would call it self-censorship, but he would call not publishing those types of things responsibility. This is in part what I mean by a different worldview, because for the slaves, it's I never expect the corporate media institutions to behave responsible, or the states to act responsible, or the corporations to behave responsible. They're there to exploit, to provoke, to try to instigate and misdirect, to try to get one to use one's energies in one way or another that is not channeled and focused. As a matter of fact, if you look at the way many of these Islamic governments that now have an open policy for their people to vent. In other words, when it comes to them ripping off the population, they come down with the iron hammer. But in this particular case, okay, you guys can vent. Now, it's obvious that this is the type of situation where they are using this as a relief valve for the pressure and tyranny that they themselves often put much of their population under. In other words, they're manipulating the situation in the same way that the Western powers who exploited this issue out. But this is what you expect from these particular state entities and so on and so forth. Now, while many people like to point out how Western states wouldn't shoot issues at Christianity or Jesus in that particular way, and for the most part, that is true. But by the same token, since all of these hocus-pocus traditions within the Abrahamic faith have a hierarchical and, yes, supremacist structure, they all use various forms of biasness and elitism towards themselves and towards other groups. So here you have a situation where it was just a few years back when the little Taliban regime, the Islams over in Afghanistan, decided that they were upset with how they were, in their view, being ignored about some of the issues that they said they held close to them concerning the welfare of their people, and how the UN and other elements were paying too much attention towards some statues over in their region that were of historical heritage. So what was their response? To blow up the statues. Now, obviously, these little Islams would not have blown up some historical mosque, but since they had that hierarchical frame of reference, the concern that Buddhists had for the Buddhist statues was irrelevant, because they have a similar mentality that the average Christian has. My God's better than your God. And that whole mentality plays into how they can disregard someone else's history or heritage, traditions, in the same way that the corporate media in the West and other elements play into that game. So it's not something that's just particular within Western societies. Just a few weeks ago, you had some more Islams in Iraq blowing up churches, Christian churches in Iraq. Now, if these were Christians who were in collaboration with the U.S. Empire, I'd be the first one to say, do what you gotta do. But it wasn't about that. These Christians that they were bombing had nothing to do with any kind of collaboration with Sam. Now, what the hell you doing running around targeting Christians in Iraq when they face the same depleted uranium that your Islamic behind has? The same sanctions, the same white phosphorus, the same Fallujah terror, yet you're going to go outside of your way and bomb some other fellow Iraqis that have faced the same tyranny that you have, just because they've been their knees into the feces of Jesus instead of bending their knees and bowing their head into the feces of Muhammad. You're out of your damn mind. But see, that's what this hocus pocus stuff does to you. Whenever anyone in these religious traditions starts spouting off that this type of stuff, that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, you may have nothing to do. You could be an Aborigine in Australia and had never heard of Christianity or, you know, Islam or Judaism or any of that stuff. Yet some fool is going to tell you that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, even though you have your own traditions. Or some fool is going to tell you that there is no God but Allah. What, in essence, they're doing is telling you and the world that they have a monopoly on the concept of God. And since the word of God, by religious people, is supposed to be the truth, they are saying they have a monopoly on truth. Now, if you look at the fact that, from a slave perspective, these religions are nothing more than a deification of one's identity, culture, heritage, history, background, at times, language. What they're doing, in essence, is deifying themselves and saying that our cultural heritage and all of that is the truth. That's a dangerous game that could lead. Well, here you have a situation where in the Sudan, for years in the Nuba Mountains, the Christopher Columbuses with turbans on had literally concentration camps against the Nuba people to destroy their cultural heritage, their language, their belief systems, their identity, similar to what the Christians were doing in the Americas, you know, kill the Indian, save the man, the same mentality, kill the African, save the human, because humanity and African for these savages doesn't go hand in hand. Now here, this government, the National Islamic Front, got into power by performing a coup. The coup was performed by them because the president at the time, Nyerere, was about to concede secularization for the black folks, who are in the majority of the population, who did not want to bow down into the feces of Allah. So here you have a situation where these cats were not down with Islam, primarily in the South. And they wanted a secular society. Wars had been raging on as the various groups, primarily in the North, were trying to Islamicize and Arabicize them. The various forces that be saw that this was this endless cycle leading nowhere, so they were ready to concede. And another clique realized this, the NIF, so they perform a coup and then thrust the country into 20 plus more years of civil war. Millions dead in the South. Concentration camps in the Nuba Mountains. And now, conflict in Darfur. Now, the process that the Christopher Columbuses were doing in the NIF to their various populations was an Arabicization and an Islamicization process. Now, much of the Arab and Islamic world has historically turned the other way about on this particular issue. This crusade is just as vicious as any crusade in barbarity against indigenous people that could be outlined in recent memory. No one can say that the Palestinians, one of the largest refugees in the planet, is taking place in the Sudan and in the Congo. One of the largest internally displaced persons in the world in the Sudan. And it's all based off of a clique knowing that to maintain control, they could play out a black book of Arabicization and Islamicization. So they're using this form of elitism as a form of manifest destiny control, knowing that they're the minority of the population, so they can wrest control over the rest of the population by perpetuating continuous violence. These are the same type of sadistic tactics that Sam has historically used. blending in his Christian religion and is currently using, mixing in his hocus pocus religion. It's a system and technique that the Zionists of Israel are using to justify their barbaric occupation of the Palestinians. And it's fascinating that if you look group by group, the majority of the people within those particular groups don't have a serious critical eye about how various forces use these religions and religions that they, you know, claim a love for to pulverize people throughout the planet. Now, one of the things that often goes on is that you see people kind of characterizing, especially in the progressive movement, like Islam is kind of like the third world religion. And in reality, Judaism, Christianity, Islam share the same historical root. They all sprang from, you know, well, Judaism came first out of the Abrahams, then Christianity and Islam. Christianity and Islam borrowed heavily from Judaism, and Judaism just ripped off the Nile Valley. I mean, Moses is just a bad impersonation of Akhenaten, and Jesus is just a bad impersonation of Horus. You know, the whole virgin birth, you know, Isis, the mother, or Set, the mother gave, the virgin who gave birth to Horus, and on down the long, dreary line. If one looks at the negative confession and so on and so forth, you can see where the ripoff and other things have come concerning the Ten Commandments. But not to go too deep into ancient Nile Valley history, nevertheless, all of them sprang out around the same region. And what one sees is that since Christianity came second, Christianity had pretty well penetrated into Europe in a European theater, and Christianity was absorbed pretty well, and Christianity became the thrust that many European forces were thrusting out with the sword to conquer, while Islam, while spreading rapidly all throughout the whole region and including in Europe, had not been absorbed simply in the same way, simply because it was the third coming. The reason why I mention this is that if Islam had come second and Christianity third, many of the regions and where people view themselves as Islam would probably just be Christian, and the thrust that Europeans had in their conquest would most likely have just been Islam's. In other words, it is not so much of the religion itself being more marketable towards a particular group. It's just how the events played out, because they're all so similar and overlapping. And in the same way that someone could take certain passages from Christianity and use it as a domination type of program, it's the same way that someone can and has taken elements from the Quran and used it. Whenever you have any of these doctrines that justify the enslavement, the flesh peddling of other human beings, then basically you have a form of imperial type of a doctrine being written. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning all of this is that when one hears all of this type of stuff about responsibility as opposed to calling it censorship and all of that, one realizes that these guys are just wrestling for various forms of control and monitoring of what can be said and can be viewed. And they're using the same hierarchical institutions in many ways and depending on them for this process. Once again, leading back into a form of tyranny that is in part the traditions that these cats come from. Now, another thing is that these are just belief systems. People can choose or choose not to believe in them, just like anything else. And the average religious person is more than vocal about what they believe, whether it be creationism, evolution, so on and so forth. Yet, when you want to critique their hocus pocus beliefs, all of a sudden, many of them cloud themselves around this is sacred, as if you can't critique their concepts and belief systems, yet all other perspectives can be attacked, ridiculed, so on and so forth. They don't hesitate. And that's fine. But there's no way in hell or heaven that these hocus pocus belief systems should be absolved from any form of critiquing or ridicule or anything else. It would be like if all of a sudden I decided that what was sacred to me was Puma tennis shoes. It started all this ritual about Puma tennis shoes. Oh, Puma tennis shoes. Puma tennis shoes. And then someone else came out with a pair of Converse and declared Converse better to wear. And then all this, and then, you know, did some mocking of Puma. Well, and then all of a sudden I get all self-righteous and all of that because I hold Puma sacred. Well, if you hold it sacred, you hold it sacred. Now, as far as the way these institutions are playing this out, I expect them to be vicious. In no way am I saying that these institutions should be more observant and respectful, because, well, they're corporate, privatized institutions. That's what they do. But now let's move on as Michael Parente goes into what fight he believes should be taken on by many people of Islamic faith who are upset by this. And then Khalil responds. Check this out.
Well, I'm just talking about proportionality. It would be, you know, there's a Muslim left in the world. They don't get the kind of publicity that what we call fundamentalist Islamists do. I write for one of the publications, the Muslim Weekly, occasionally. They have some very real grievances about imperialism, and that's the issue I think should not be lost sight of. I'm just struck by the way in which we've made so much of these cartoons. I don't agree with you, Halib, that they're comparable to the to the Nazi cartoons. I saw those Nazi cartoons in Völkisch Bewacht, excuse my German. They were so salacious and vicious and pornographic. And I saw these cartoons, and they're offensive, they're terrible, I guess. If that's the way you feel about them, fine, then demonstrate and get on. How about linking those cartoons to the whole history of imperialism and to the destruction? I mean, as we talked, as this issue arose, hundreds and hundreds of Muslims and non-Muslims and other people in the Middle East have been killed by U.S. military power. And that's what we should be focusing on, which is the frame of reference that allows those cartoons to be published and sees them as perfectly all right.
Well, right now we are rubbing salt into the wound. That's the problem. I'm not saying that the demonstrations, the violent expressions of anger, burning down embassies or killing people, I'm not saying that that's at all justifiable or called for. I agree with you on that. Nobody, even the majority of Muslims, don't condone that kind
right.
of reaction.
Right.
And yet, to make some kind of symmetrical, perfectly neat, symmetrical, a mirror image type of situation where what's acceptable for Christians should be acceptable for Muslims, what's acceptable for Jews should be acceptable, you know, to just say, look, we do caricatures of Jesus Christ, nobody goes bonkers burning down the Algerian embassy. Or whatever. That's a false argument, because right now Denmark is not being invaded and killed and picked on as Palestine or Iraq are. So it's a completely disingenuous argument to say, oh, look, don't be so sensitive. Those caricatures aren't so bad. It's just Prophet Muhammad with a bomb in his turban. It's not as bad as such or such other offense. I think that is really not helpful. It's not a left argument.
All right, this is in part what I mean by this. We're in complete different worlds. And, you know, part of the thing that I mean by that is like when Khalil says this is not a left argument, one has to ask, is religion a left or radical argument? Now, I know that there are many who are trying to say it is. But, you know, by mixing in this whole spiritual, this is spiritual, that is spiritual, and all of that type of stuff. But you can hold things as sacred, quote-unquote, water, for instance, but not have to be in some kind of hocus-pocus mode. A guy can hold the woman's childbearing capacity and overall life as sacred, but it doesn't mean you have to look up into the sky to get that information, or vice versa, from a woman to a man. In essence, what I'm saying is that religions are a political, social, psychological, hierarchical institution, and one has to ask honestly, this. And one also has to face the fact that you can be a capitalist and you can be a Christian. You can be a capitalist and be a Hebron. And yes, you can be a capitalist and be an Islam. But you can't be a capitalist and be a slave. That's the raw, real world right there. The DNAs just don't mix, period. You can't be a capitalist and be a slave. But you can be a capitalist and be an Islam, or a Christian, or a Hebron. Now, if you are truly a slave in revolt, you know that this is a major contradiction to have a force that claims it's fighting for real human justice and so on and so forth, yet could have half or more of his little cadres part of the capitalist privatizing order. See, Boy George is a Christian. Now, I know there's many pranksters out there who would try to say that, well, he's a right-wing Christian, and others will say these guys are fundamentalist Islams or right-wing Hebrons and on and on. But see, the reality is I don't really consider them in that particular way overall from the construct of the hierarchical construct of religion. And the reason why I say that is that you can use and digest those religions and take what you want from those religions and use them because of the hierarchical structure and because of many of the passages within these various books that gives you in a sense, the right to use your allegiance to that particular faith to justify your expansion throughout the planet. They have that element of, you know, the chosen people and, you know, our God created the universe and your duty is to spread the message of this faith or that faith and all of that type of, in a sense, cultural imperialism. So if you use, if you decide to go at it about in that particular way, in many ways, that's not a contradiction. You know, some may choose to focus in on another aspect, but the reality is that there's a domination theology to these religions, and then there's a quote-unquote, quote-unquote, liberation theology. The oppressed people generally will focus in on the liberation theology forms, where the people in power will often emphasize on the domination and expansion form of the respective religions. So, since those elements have it in there, one can see the whole mechanism of this hierarchical structure and how it plays itself out. So, since we have a situation where us slaves in resistance are fighting against the elite ruling privatized model, we don't have to trip off the fact about a fellow slave being a privatizer because, or capitalist or any of that, because then you're not a slave. See, so how we define true freedom and how the religious types do and what it means to be a slave and a slave in resistance and what it means to be an Islam, Christian, or Hebron are two different things. Now, as we see basically in part what's being done is the various forces are expressing their form of outrage and trying to get various states to respond by various forms of censorship. You know, fire the people who did the cartoons, back off and do self-censorship in the same way that many Western Christian societies don't attack or mock Jesus. You know, many you know, Islamic societies, of course, would not attack, you know, in any public or in their publications overall. You know, most would not ridicule Muhammad or, you know, like that. So there's a form of self-censorship, and it plays out within the state. Now, the reason why I mention this is that there's strong similarities. I'm going to do a thing in particular on religions. Historically, currently, and all of that. But let me just say this right quick. You have a situation where, as I mentioned before, religions, you know, when people say there is no God but Allah, or a particular group's a chosen person, or Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, what they're saying is that they have a monopoly on God. If there's no God but Allah, they're saying they monopolize God. And for God, for them, God is the truth, the word. So they say they have a monopoly on truth. Now, what else also plays that particular game? The state, the corporations. What they tell us in their privatized model, which is similar to religions with their own privatized model, is that there's only one way to go, the private market ways. So they're both privatizers, or all of them are privatizers. You know, the religious type of traditions in the Abrahamic system, and the whole corporate state setup. So no matter how much you starving, they'll still tell you that the private market's the way to go. And no matter what is happening to the earth, you'll still have people tell you that their particular faith is the way to go. Until you accept Jesus or whoever, then you won't have the answer. So this type of privatization of the truth is very dangerous and volatile. Let me just also throw this in here. It's kind of a joke also to hear these cats all scream about how their religions are persecuted and this and that, and it's basically by one another, and they're all related, you know, as I mentioned before. When anyone who's halfway honest knows that, like, a religion like the voodoo religion is so ridiculed and mocked in TV shows and movies, it's always mixed in with this so-called black magic and dark magic and all of this type of rhetoric, and all of these dominant religions attack it, and then also they're by effect attacking the people. So if you really want to see prejudice played out, check out some of these, you know, voodoo's curse movies and all of that that have historically and still come dribbling out. But to show you how this cartoon networking of hocus pocus advocates and the corporate state media overlap in with all this censorship and so on and so forth, let's go back in time over 20 years ago. And engage in a conversation that Frank Zappa had on CNN's Crossfire with none other than Robert Novak and this clown named John Laughlin. Now, this was over censorship of seven words that were, you know, the so-called dirty words that they wanted censorship censored in, you know, music and a censorship in video. So let's check out Frank in this Crossfire debate over 20 years ago. Check this out.
Mr. Zappa, let me see if I can get your position straight. Are you saying that there is no filth, no pornography, no obscenity that should not be permitted to be sold and distributed freely in this country in the form of music videos and rock music?
I don't think that music qualifies as pornography. And especially since this whole business started with words. We're talking about words.
All right.
All the complaints were about words.
All right, take the pornography out there. Is there no filth, no obscenity that you think would qualify to be suppressed?
Hello.
We're talking about words, and I don't believe that there's any word that needs to be suppressed. There's no scientific or realistic reason why you should keep people from hearing certain words.
Let me just follow that up.
There's certain words you use that are, to describe an act of fornication, which are brutal.
So?
How about putting that on the radio? That's not permitted to be put on the radio. Do you think it should be?
Yes.
You think it should be on the radio?
Absolutely.
And on television?
Absolutely.
And
in politics.
I don't understand.
Because
that.
It's already in politics. I think that if you use the so-called strong words, you get your point across faster and you can save a lot of beating around the bush.
Well,
why are people afraid of words?
Well, look, Mr. Zappa, we're not talking about just words. When we talk about rock videos, we're not talking about rock videos. I beg your pardon. But
the whole thing is words.
I beg your pardon, but what they're trying to...
They're selling it with rock
what
videos.
What they're trying to restrict in Maryland is also obscene rock videos.
No, they are not.
Well, no, they're trying
words.
To apply the obscenity language to videos and to record. But why do you underestimate the power of words? Words have consequences. They have impact on people. Now, I agree with you that the first line of responsibility is the family to stop the kind of garbage that we're talking about here today. But good grief, can't we call on our government to help us in this fight, Frank? I mean, you have kids. Are you an anarchist? Is it the government's role to do nothing about this?
No, I'm a conservative, and you may not like that, but I am. The fact of the matter is, this bill that they're talking about in Maryland is stupid.
How so? What is the function of government, Frank? The civil government. Isn't it to, in part, promote general welfare and to help protect families?
Do you think that you're protecting somebody by taking away seven words?
It's not just words.
It is words. It's about words.
Words also connote ideas, Mr. Zappa. Are you for songs that portray incest as just another kind of sex and perhaps even preferable sex? Are you for that?
Would you ban the mention of any incestual activities? Would you?
Well, why don't we make a pact?
Then why don't you better take a look at the Bible and see what's in there, what happens after Sodom and Gomorrah.
The Bible does not advocate incest.
But
it condemns it, Frank.
It mentions it. Well,
we're talking about advocacy, Mr. Zappa.
No, we're not. We're talking about words.
No, we're not
talking
about
the content of the words.
Oh, you don't think words connote ideas, huh?
Yes, they can be assembled into sentences and get ideas.
Well, how about answering my question about incest? Do you support records that promote incest as just another kind of sex, or in some instances it might even be preferable? Do you agree with
me? No, I don't agree with it. I have no interest in incest, but I don't think that anybody whose right mind would desire to have the government step in to make sure that they install a censor board that keeps certain things from being said.
Let me ask you something, Mr. Zappa.
Because sometimes the dumbest thing that gets said makes the point for you. And if a person is doing a song about incest, it gives you a chance to say, maybe incest is really wrong. I didn't realize that incest was such a terrible problem in the United States that we suddenly needed government intervention to cure incest in America by keeping words off of records.
Well, Mr. Zappa, incest in America didn't used to be such a terrible problem, did it, Mr. Zappa? That's come about in the last 20 years or so.
Not so.
Oh, really?
I understand.
The problem. Not
I
advocated in form.
All right, so you can see what's going on here. Here, Frank is in a debate with these knucklehead right-wingers 20 years ago about what's obscene, what's offensive to another group of people. And what are they promoting? A form of responsibility. And that translates to self-censorship. And if you can't self-censor yourself, then the state should come in and censor you. So the same game. And since I don't see any of these institutions, these corporate state institutions, as being legit in the first place, you can see the farce that's taking place. During this time that Frank was debating these guys was in a part of the gold rush. Of course, it's continued on and expanded on, but they were right in the middle of the whole, you know, SNL type gold rush of the day. When you read about what was going on and all of that type of stuff, you see that the true forms, at least from a slave's perspective, of obscene actions by the capitalists, by the privatizers, were taking place. But that's not the discussion that these corporate minions wish to get into. It was all about, you know, words, obscene images and videos, etc., etc. See, this is how they always want the masses to indulge themselves in. Meanwhile, they're McDonaldizing the planet. They're imperializing the planet in a true form of obscene behavior. But if they have your head up into the sky, well, in part, they got you. Now here, Novak asked Frank, does he think it's a good idea to have lyrics that are pro-incest? So let's check out Frank's response to old Novak. So check this out.
Sure. Position on government censorship, but just you're a musician, you're a producer, a big man in show business. Do you think it is a good idea? Let's not say that the government's going to get in this all. Just as a matter of taste, of artistic preference, you think it's a good idea to write lyrics that says incest is good for you? Does that make any sense?
Well, it might make sense to Prince. That's his business, because that's mainly the song that they're talking about.
Don't you have an opinion on
it? My opinion is he's got a right to sing it, he's got a right to say it,
really?
And I got a right
really?
To not
where
buy it.
Where does that right come from, Mr. Knapper? Where does the right to advocate incest come from?
The song does not advocate incest.
No, there are songs that advocate incest.
Tell me them. I
where?
Haven't heard.
You ought to get out more, and I don't think you're being candid with it. You know what those signs are. Songs, huh? Now, you said there's a right to do this. Where does the right come from? Your group is called the Mothers of the Invention.
Mothers of Invention.
You've
got to get out more.
Yeah, and you're a pretty inventive guy. You make up a lot of stuff, like what was in the mind of the founding fathers. Would you look at the camera and tell them?
Which camera?
Any camera.
And right, tell them? Directing the show?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you certainly need some direction, Mr. Zappa.
Spank me here? Come on, what are you
Well, you into that, too? Huh? No, I'm not into spanking.
I love it when you froth like
I'm
that.
Sure. Now, would you tell our viewers that what the founding fathers...
I thought he was going to be the one frothing today. I'm glad that you did.
Wrong again, Frank. Wrong again. Now,
I got a napkin
would
you, for
would you
when
tell
you
us?
Cool.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Now, would you look in the camera and tell them with a straight face that you think the founding fathers had in mind the kind of garbage you sing and write when they drafted the Fifth Amendment? Do you really believe that, Mr. Zappa?
I don't think it applies. The founding fathers, one thing, kept slaves, and take a look at what Benjamin Franklin used to do over at the Hellfire Club.
But you have repeatedly...
Not exactly
you have
a bunch of swell guys. I think they had some good things in mind. But we have a document, the letter of the law.
Yeah.
Let's use the letter of the law and interpret
it.
Wait a minute.
It is relevant because you have repeatedly, in opposing even ratings for rock music, you have repeatedly cited the Constitution and the First Amendment. Do you think the founding fathers really had the First Amendment, that they gave us the First Amendment to defend songs glorify Satanism and incest and suicide? You believe that?
Absolutely.
You really believe
that?
Yeah,
I believe it.
Oh, you're an idiot then.
Mr. Tell you what, kiss my How do you like
take your teeth out. Take your teeth out.
Let's call it. Come on, let's cover that over to me, Mr.
Now, Frank's responding. Good. First of all, he's not giving them any respect because they don't deserve any respect. He's clowning him back and he's attacking him. Because, see, part of the reason why I included this aspect into this thing with the Hocus Pocus response of the cartoons and people talking about self-censorship, or to rephrase it, responsibility, is that if you look at the way these societies and states have played these things out, here they're talking about lyrical and music censorship. The other cats were talking about religious imagery censorship or being responsible. But all of these things are in part political. And as we've seen carried on by the state as it encroaches and develops more and more power and more influence, what we also see is more and more political discourse censorship. Remember and see how they are attacking various professors in universities right before the war started, the current one, about those who were speaking out. They were going to go on a list. How when a guy in San Francisco at the 24-hour fitness spoke about Sam's involvement in Imperial Wars and Crusades. What happens? Some FBI guys come visit him. And on and on and on. This is a form of intimidation. Because, see, you can't have censorship, is what I'm saying, without having a form of Big Brotherism. Big Brotherism by the state, whether it's a theocratic state, a corporate state, and what ends up happening is you have people internally start to Big Brother their own minds. In other words, they start to censor themselves. They start to control themselves on a certain level because of how they become conditioned by societies that mandate a thought process. Because censorship, in a sense, is a form of regimenting an aspect of thought process. Of course, they can't control everything that you think, of course, but they can condition you to a point where you realize there's going to be a response, a negative one, if you think out loud in certain ways. So at a certain point, just like many of these corporate reporters that you see, you know, with Boy George and all of that, they are trained little drones that know what and what not to ask. And it's to the point where it's developed in this particular culture that many of them don't even see themselves as being constrained or under a form of self-censorship. Because for many of them, of course, not all, this is just the way they've evolved within this whole culture, this whole media culture. So one can see how these processes of censorship play and how they play themselves out. Now here Novak asked Frank about the artistic value of music with incest type lyrics. So let's check this out.
You ducked a question. I thought you
Which
asked.
One?
I understand your position. The government, I understand you have an absolutist position on the First Amendment. A lot of people have an absolutist position. But I asked you a question and you ducked it. I want you to tell me if you think that the lyrics saying that incest is a good thing have any artistic value or are in good taste, or if you must have some standards of your own. I'm not talking about the government.
You asked me for opinion. I don't enjoy that kind of material. I'm not here to sell records for Prince or anybody else.
But you defend it being sold, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Well, then you're part of the problem.
Don't you think it would be a good thing to say to some of these people to cool it?
No, it's not my job.
What is your job?
My job is to represent myself.
What is your job? You once wrote a song called "We're All in It for the Money."
It's not a song. It's the name of an album.
Is that
you
right?
You got to get out now.
Yeah, yeah. How much money you made peddling this stuff, Mr. Zappa?
Millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars, Mr. Lofton.
All right, look. It seems to me, Mr. Zappa, that you've got to ask these people, both of them are on you,
what they would propose. He's accusing me of doing something that is similar to what that is being argued about. My lyrics aren't in question here.
Really?
What would you propose, Mr. Lofton, as the means of censorship?
Well, I said I agree with Mr. Zappa that the first line of defense and responsibility is the parents. But what I do not agree with is that the parents have to stand alone, and we are not entitled to call upon our government to help us in the fight against
this
kind
of
threat.
What government censor is going to decide for you?
It's not... Tom, I've heard you say repeatedly on this show that we are our government, that we're allowed to call on our government.
Well, you have to have a man who is the censor, or a woman.
Wait,
have to decide, this Lofton can hear, and this Lofton cannot hear.
Tom, it would work the way the implementation of any law works. You pass a law, it has words in it, and then the elected representatives of the people try their best to apply it. It's the way you do it with everything else. Will it apply it perfectly? No. But we're entitled to use the force of our civil government to help protect our families. How could you oppose that? Does the government have any purpose, Frank?
Yeah, it has a number of purposes.
What is it?
I'm not going to give you a civics lesson here, but one thing, we must not see eye to eye on the idea of a government that must forbid things in order to protect
families.
Really?
What is the government's role? You've told me several times what it shouldn't do.
How about national defense?
Yeah, I consider this national defense, pal. Our families are under attack from people like you with these lyrics.
John, you don't have to buy them.
Can I make a statement about national defense?
Yeah.
The biggest threat to America today is not communism. It's moving America toward a fascist theocracy. And everything that's happened during the Reagan administration is steering us right down that path.
Oh, Mr. Zappa,
do
you really think? All kidding aside, in this country, this is just that we are moving toward a fascist theocracy. Anything
goes. Here we are, buddy.
Do you think things like this would ever have been permitted?
Again.
When we were kids, you're about my age, maybe a little younger. Well, I'm 55. Do you think when I was a kid that they would permit songs like that to be sung? Permissiveness is the game. You're not really serious if you're saying we're going toward a fascist theocracy.
That's right, we are.
Wait a minute.
In what way? Give me one example.
One example of a fascist theocracy.
When you have a government that prefers a certain moral code derived from a certain religion, and that moral code turns into legislation to suit one certain religious point of view, and if that code happens to be very, very right-wing, almost toward Attila the Hun,
well, then you are an anarchist. Every form of civil government is based on some kind of morality, right?
Morality in terms of behavior, not in terms of theology.
Well, of course, but look, I mean, I didn't believe in your theory.
Wait a minute, gentlemen. We have to take a break now.
Okay.
We'll be back with John Lofton and Frank Zappa talking about rock music, I think, after these messages.
Now, it's interesting hearing Frank in this thing over 20 years ago. You can tell by the sound quality it's over 20 years. Frank, once again, was right on concerning the issue of, or headed in the right direction concerning this whole fascist theology and where the country was headed. And that's in part because of how a theology moral code and the state, as I mentioned before, have merged together. And how they're similar in their hierarchical construct. See, I've mentioned this many times before about the whole, hierarchical construct of religions and, of course, the hierarchical construct of the state. So you can see how the merging of those two entities can play themselves out. And when you have elements that are also based in trying to maintain order, then the hallmarks of tyranny can be ruthlessly set in place. Now, this Lofton clown says to Zappa that you defend, you know, so-called bad lyric music being sold. And when Frank says yes, he defends, you know, Prince or whoever's rights to have whatever type of lyrics that they want, then what's Lofton's response? So then you're part of the problem. This is the same type of rhetoric you hear Boy George playing. You know, you're either with us or with the terrorists. You're either with us or you're part of the problem. In other words, there's no discourse. There's no alternative analysis or view. There's no alternative take. You're either with us, and if you're not, pretend you're with us, i.e. center yourself, shut up, cram an American flag up your behind, or in the case of some of these hocus pocus types, a hocus pocus flag up your behind, wind yourself up, and be a drone for the powers that be, religious or otherwise. This is how they play their game. Now, as we wrap this up, John Lofton is told that he doesn't have to listen to the music or his kids if they're so offended by it. So let's see how Lofton responds to it. Let's take it from there.
A producer and a musician who has testified before Congress that he does not think that rock music, dirty lyrics and all, should be censored.
Or rated.
John Lofton takes the other view. Mr. Lofton.
Yes.
You don't have to buy this, you know. You don't have to buy this music with dirty words.
Well, I guess my concern extends beyond my own family, beyond my own children. I'm concerned about the whole society, the whole country. Other people's families.
Can you control what your children buy?
I agree, and I want to say for the third time, I agree with Frank that is the first line of responsibility.
But you can't even control what your children...
No, as they get older, it's very difficult.
No, but you can control what they listen to in the house and they're out.
Tell me how you do that.
They're rarely in the house.
You hear it, so
Shut up in the room and you can't hear it.
I hear it, I turn it, I go up and I throw the record away.
You can't hear half the things I tell you. You can't hear those things.
But all you're trying to get around is the fact that you have an individual responsibility, and I think Mr. Zappa is right. That's as far as it can go.
But, you know, one of the things that interests me is the seemingly totally different worlds that you and I live in, Mr. Zappa. For example, you told this hearing last September that in America, quote, there is a tendency to hide sex, unquote. That is the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. Sex is everywhere in America. It's on TV, radio, videos, advertising. What do you mean we hide sex in America?
You do hide sex in America because if given the choice between putting erotic sex into a television show or putting violence, usually it is the violence that is opted
for. How about both?
Putting both in?
Yeah.
Or you mean in combination?
Well, I mean both. I mean the television is full of sex right now.
It's not really sex. It's full of titillation.
How about advertising? Is that full of sex?
It's titillation.
Mr. Zappa, when somebody mentioned the videos, you said, hey, no, this is not it. But why don't you want to talk about the videos?
The reason I don't want to talk about the videos is the issue came up over the lyrics and what they've done in trying to promote the issue. If rock videos did not exist, they wouldn't have had those splashy little bumpers to put on before each of the local news shows when they would do a story on
this. Well, do you feel differently about rock videos and that they should be censored?
No, I don't. I just think that you shouldn't even discuss them when the topic is words.
But I mean, we can discuss anything we want.
Oh, sure.
But you think anything goes on the rock videos just like anything goes on the lyrics?
Sure.
I'm told that there is a rock video that's about to come out that has a school teacher dressing in front of a student.
It's out already. It's one of the ones they use for bumpers. They showed it at the Senate hearing. It's called Hot for Teacher, and the group is Van Halen.
What do you think of that?
I think it's amusing.
Amusing that
the kids should see it.
That
why do you think the kids?
Because
I want to tell me what it's about a little bit. He thinks it's amusing that you might have a grade school class that is hot for teacher in a sexual way. Why is that amusing?
Why shouldn't it be amusing?
Well, you're not smiling. You don't look too happy about that.
Well, why should I smile sitting here with you?
Well, you can fake it. Right?
I like him better than you.
But what is
your rough idea
about
of what's going on?
It sure does. But of course, I had that before I came here. What's amusing about it?
That is amusing to the people who like the concept of here comes the teacher. You expect the teacher to be sour. The music starts. The teacher takes off her clothes and she is wearing some kind of a bathing suit like in a beauty contest and does a dance on the desk and the kids look up and they are having a good time.
Well, that's real laugh riot, Frank. Now look, one of the things I don't understand is someone who writes, why you have repeatedly denigrated words and said, well, something's just words. You know, Adolf Hitler used words very effectively. It was called the big lie, and what it resulted in was 6 million Jews being put in ovens. Now, why do you say that words aren't important and don't have consequences?
I didn't say the words weren't important.
What do you mean when you say just words?
This argument basically is about the 7 dirty words that the FCC complains about. And that's what it is. And I don't see any reason to keep people from hearing those syllables put together. Those are not magic words. That's not abracadabra. You're going to turn into something
they haven't heard.
Certainly they do. And it depends on how they're used and in what context. In fact, the big one, the one that starts with the F, has maybe 15 different ways in which it can be used in language.
Mr. Zappa, you were talking about the social background of the founding fathers, so you're a student of American sociology. But let me ask you this. Do you think this country, you get around this country a lot, I'm sure, mm-hmm. Do you think that the lyrics of these songs reflect the real spirit of this country?
It reflects certain aspects of the spirit of this country.
You think it does?
Yeah, and see, if you don't like the spirit, then change the things that make the spirit happen. In other words, if you have kids that are rebellious, and you have kids who are hopeless, you have kids who go to drugs, then give them something to hope for.
Like what? What would you tell a kid he ought to hope for nowadays, Frank?
What I tell kids, and I've been telling kids for quite some time, is first, register to vote, and second, as soon as you're old enough, run for something.
And you really think that's going to give kids hope to tell them to go register for vote?
Mr. Zappa, when you...
Well, I don't know whether it makes them commit suicide, but I think it gives them a little bit more hope.
Mr. Zappa.
So once again, you hear a situation where, Frank basically says the most responsible, quote unquote, type of Americana type thing to young people to get registered to vote and to run for office. And these zealots are so entranced by this bad word phenomenon, especially Laughlin, and pushing this censorship stuff, that they mock him, or at least Lofton does, for Zappa telling kids to go out and vote and run for office. This just shows you how cynical these clowns that Zappa was facing really are. And it shows that, you know, it wasn't like he was saying anything all that radical. It's just that Lofton and these other cats, in comparison, have such a right-wing radical position and are such state-aligned apologists and saboteurs of basic rights that they basically can't control themselves when it comes to encroaching on the basic rights of more and more people and further empowering the rights of the state and its whole program of censorship, whether it's under the guise of hocus pocusisms or American family values or whatever. At the end of the day, on the Cartoon Network that we've been listening to, the various forms of religious and state censorship games play out all the same. And it's quite interesting how various forces, hocus pocus or otherwise, quite naturally align themselves historically and currently with forces that be, that believe in censorship, or wait, or being responsible. Hold on a sec. The other day, someone gave me a CD of Tim Wise. It was one of his lectures called White Like Me. I featured Tim Wise a little while back as part of my thing on the economic color of whiteness. The particular lecture that Tim gave, which was in L.A., was a pretty good lecture and stuff like that. And but this also had a question and answer forum to it. And that aspect is what we're going to dip into a little bit in this Shameless file called White Skin Patriarchal Mask, or also I may call it Blinded by the White. I haven't made up my mind yet. Well, it's both right now. But let's check out what a white female asked him during the questioning and answer period concerning is he only talking to men? So let's take it from there. Check this out.
I have a question. I'm not sure if you answered it already. And I want to bring it down to something really simple. Are you speaking to men only? Because I don't necessarily feel spoken to the rest of the women in this room feel. You know, I don't understand really how this breaks down, and between the way women relate to each other of all classes and colors, and the way women are treated by men of all classes and colors, and can you talk about the difference in the way men white men respond to patriarchy and patriarchy? And I see black and brown men acting the same way towards black and brown women as white men.
Yeah, I was talking, I understand your question. I was speaking specifically about political.
Okay, I don't know what the hell is going on, but I hope you can hear it. But what she basically said was Tim talking to men only, and she didn't feel that that he was really talking to her as a white woman in his lecture, White Like Me, in regard to the whole issue of race, white supremacy, and how it plays itself out. Now, what's kind of fascinating about that is that here you have a situation where what she's doing is she's saying, as a white woman, since you see a situation where black men act patriarchal towards black women, as she sees, and Latino men act in a patriarchal manner towards Latino women, which is all true, then you know, where does her self as a white woman fit in to this whole thing concerning white supremacy and all of that? Now, what's kind of amazing about this is that, you know, I've mentioned this before, but this just fits right into this denial aspect that I'm going to have to go over some aspects of this again. The construction of whiteness, which did not always exist, it was constructed by elite white males, was constructed for, by them to maintain order. And so that the servant class of white people, indentured servitude class, then various ethnic groups of Europeans would not align themselves with the black slaves. Now they did this, the elite, to maintain power and to then infuse people who really are not within their class division, but have them identify the same as them. Now, in part, what this engineering process is within the construct of whiteness is how I've said that whiteness is not just a social construct, but whiteness is an economic, social, political, psychological, and yes, patriarchal construct. Now, if you were to ask some of these black grandfathers some of the experiences they've had back in the day, or observe some of the experiences that they have had, you would see that back in the day there was a law called reckless eyeballing. Now, this law was designed by white men to quote unquote protect white womanhood, and it was a law that stated that if a black man looked at a white woman in a way that the white woman considered sexually threatening, then she can go have charges filed against them. And then the law and the power of the state and white supremacy, white males and white violence would come crashing down on the black male, who would often be lynched, brutalized, etc., etc. Now, this was in part to maintain white male patriarchal supremacy and dominance by state laws and by force. But the reality is that white women themselves played an active role in maintaining this construct. So in part, white women were defending white male patriarchy. Now, we all know that there's patriarchy that exists within this society, within all forms and with all groups. But see, one of the problems that I tell sisters all the time when they're talking about how they have conflicts with white women over organizing on some of these issues of gender is that while there's a form of personal male bias and male patriarchal that exists throughout the world that women can relate to, and we'll talk about in the American context that, you know, women in America can relate to, how, you know, it affects them in the workplace, how it affects them in their personal life and all of that. There's another layer, though, that primarily white women don't want to deal with, and that's how the whole economic construct of whiteness and how it is based within the capitalist model that maintains white privilege is in part a patriarchal concept. In other words, what I'm saying is that if you are a woman, a white woman, and you are not attacking the construct of whiteness, you are not attacking patriarchy in white male dominant patriarchy at its core. Now, you can fight various other forms of patriarchy and the various forms of patriarchy that other women of color and so on deal with and stuff. But the whole capitalist structure, the whole privatized structure, the elite structure is based in a patriarchal model and system and subset. And so unless you address that, you are not dealing with an element of and the powerful stratum of white male patriarchy. And you've had white women who consider themselves, you know, fighters against patriarchy, but at the same time support the construct of whiteness. And this is how you have white many white women spinning around in a state of contradictions. Take the South, where you have many white women still today, along with their white male counterparts, defend the South, you know, during the Civil War and all of that type of stuff. And, you know, use the same type of rhetoric of states' rights and so on and so forth. Yet in the South, as well as the North, but in the South in particular, they were declaring that their independence was being overridden, their autonomy was being overridden. This is what they claim now, especially. And this is why they seceded, you know, for independence. Yet at that very same time, white women in the South, as well as the North, but in the South in this particular case, they didn't have the right to vote. It wasn't like the South said, we're going to secede, and then women, or at least white women, are going to get all these rights. Nah, they were still maintaining a patriarchal model. Yet you still had white women support their Southern husbands, their Southern fathers, etc., etc., i.e., they were still supporting the patriarchal model and construct, which once again helps outline how white women in part have historically supported the patriarchal construct of white male dominance, because in part they support the construct of whiteness, an elite construct developed by white males to maintain their economic, social, political, and yes, patriarchal construct on Sam's plantation and the world over. Now, I'm going to try to play this Tim's response. Hopefully, it'll come out somewhat clear. If not, I'm just going to have to fade it out, because her part wasn't clear at all. But let's go into her response, or Tim's response to the woman. So check this out.
Patriarchy is a system that encourages all men to behave in certain ways and really subsidizes that kind of destructive male behavior, right, by privileging all men in that under that system. But what I was suggesting in contradistinction to Dukat's book, where he talks about not simply personal behavior, which is clearly can be impressive by any man against any women, and where those impressions have been all communities, where he's talking about the tendency of men, this is his argument, that men, because of patriarchy and because of the propaganda that comes with patriarchy and the privileges that come with it, that men therefore respond politically and socially to the desire to maintain that as a political system by their voting behavior. In other words, that they will go vote for reactionary politicians who will defend and even heighten and intensify that very system. And what I'm suggesting is that his analysis takes whiteness as a norm for granted, because indeed men of color, though they are every bit as capable of patriarchal oppression in a home or in a community, do not then go, interestingly, and I'm asking why, okay, do not go and then vote for hyper-patriarchal politicians in the same way that white men do.
Do you have any statistics on how women vote across color?
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting, in this particular election, I think increasingly, so I've written about this, and spoken about it many times as well, that increasingly white women are voting more and more like white men. And it's fascinating. Yes, there's a gender gap, but it continues to shrink in the white community. It's fascinating. We talk about the gender gap as if somehow white women were sort of inherently progressive, and there's a real fallacy in this. I wrote an article back after Proposition 209 passed in this state. I wrote an article for the National Women's Studies Association Journal where I was looking at this issue, because I wanted to know why it was that white women went to the polls and also voted for Prop 209, also voted to get rid of affirmative action, because the whole strategy in this state by nice liberal groups was to try and appeal to white women. They didn't want to talk about race at all. Y'all remember that. They didn't want to talk about race. They wanted to turn it into just the gender issue. So folks went around saying, listen, white women, don't you realize that you've been the main beneficiaries of... And it's true, of course. the main beneficiaries of affirmative action. But that was the message. You're going to be hurt. And white women said, all right, we're still voting to get rid of affirmative action. So I wrote an article in which I was trying to figure out why would white women ignore their interest, their rational self-interest in economic terms, and vote for policies that were actually against them. And I broke it down. I won't go into the long. I mean, you can get the article off my website, actually, or you can look it up. It's called Is Sisterhood Conditional? Article. And what I concluded, looking at the data that I could find in the analysis, was that white women, again, because of white privilege, in spite of patriarchy and in spite of sexist oppression, have that luxury of identifying more with their whiteness than with their interest as women. And so, in a sense, what they were doing was voting like white men, either the white men who were their fathers who they thought were going to be harmed by affirmative action, or the white men who were their husbands if they were heterosexual, or their sons, or whatever, that they were, and increasingly that is true, increasingly white women do not vote very differently than white men, particularly when the issue is having to do with race on a ballot or something like that, and that gender gap is so small. The gender gap this last year in 2004 was about 7 points, but still 55% of white women still voted for Bush. Now 62% of white men did, but 55% of white women did too. So that gender gap is there, but it is dwarfed by the racial gap. In other words, the interracial differences are much, much bigger than the intra-racial differences on the basis of gender. So my concern is that white women have been brought into, you know, in spite of patriarchal oppression and in spite of sexist oppression, are still have enough of that white privilege that sometimes is because of their attachment to white men. Interestingly, the only white women who didn't vote for 209 in this state were white lesbians. Okay? White lesbians did not. And we can discuss why, we can theorize as to why perhaps it is less of an inherent sort of feeling of needing to defend and protect white men. Whatever it is, white lesbians were much clearer on a race analysis than heterosexual white women. And so I think what we have to recognize is that white privilege is capable of sucking in not only working class white people in general, not only evangelical Christians who are white in general, not only heterosexuals in general, but both white men and white women. And so it's something that we need to deal with whenever we're talking about the geography gap, the gender gap, the class gap, the religion gap, the morals gap, or whatever else. We got to be real clear that it's something about white folks. White men are perhaps the ones leading that backlash charge, but a lot of white women have fallen in line with that for one reason or another. We have to understand that.
All right, what you could hear, barely, from what Tim was saying was that he broke down how the issue concerning white women over the affirmative action issue basically had a situation where white women overwhelmingly supported the destruction of affirmative action, even though they are the... were the main beneficiaries of affirmative action. So he talked and mentioned how white women, in spite of patriarchy that they face, end up voting against more or less their own interests. But in a sense, there were some two key words that Tim said, and that was white women. Even though they're women, as I stated before, whiteness in itself is a form of patriarchy. So that's what I meant by this conflicting dynamic that white women find themselves in, because by accepting the construct of whiteness, you basically have patriarchal women. Because the construct of whiteness in itself is in part a patriarchal model. This is also in part why you see women in many of these religions, regardless of what sect they're in. You know, they could be hardcore, quote unquote, fundamentalists or whatever. You know, or women, you know, you see these women in the Promise Keepers, who make it clear of their patriarchal, hierarchical model. And who do you see playing a dominant role in a Christian-based country like this? When I say Christian, I mean most of the people who profess a religion are Christians. You see primarily white women. And Some would think that that's a contradiction, but as I've outlined before, since whiteness itself is in part a patriarchal construct, you can see how women, white women, would play a part in the Promise Keepers because they accept their whiteness and that patriarchal position that they are then placed in as women can meld right together. And you now I've also often stated that religions are in part, especially out of the Abrahamic tradition, they're basically male supremacist murder cults, but they are they're also part of a patriarchal construct. The players, the dominant role of women, I mean of men, etc., etc. So you can see how many women who may claim that they stand for women's rights not see how that they align themselves within a patriarchal construct that is in supposed contradictions to their overall belief system. So, once again, from the religion to the construct of whiteness, we see some of the aspects play themselves out, and people who accept their white skin are in part accepting a patriarchal mask. Hold on a sec. About wrap it up for Slave tonight. As I said earlier, you can be a Christian and be a capitalist. You can be a capitalist and be a Hebron. You can be a capitalist and be an Islam. But you can't be a capitalist and be a slave. Let's just make sure, fellow slaves, that we remain slaves in revolt for true freedom against all forms of tyranny. Patriarchal, racial, and otherwise. Until the next time, slave out.